Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I am Ami Kassar, your host, and I'm so excited to have my friend Jennifer Berkowitz, queen of scaling up. I hear all kinds of interesting stories from her. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm so appreciative, and I'm so appreciative of you. You are truly the rock star. So I give all the kudos to you.
Come on. Jen, you said before we started, you had a funny story to share. So let's go.
Yeah. And if he's listening, so this morning I was listening to one of your podcasts and I was listening to Jeff Silbert. And if Jeff Silbert's out there in the cyber world right now, Jeff, when he spoke to you about his earlier days doing sales and marketing consulting, he consulted to me. He was actually a mentor of mine when he worked at a company called M5 Networks. And I used to pick his brain all the time. And then when he started his consulting firm, I hired him in my old tech company to help us scale our sales. He's awesome. He's a rock star. So I'm thrilled that you interviewed him because the world needs to know more about Jeff. And I'm thrilled that he decided to go down the franchise route because he's just great with people.
He's an amazing person. So he's right now the president of EO New Jersey. And so we're kind of president neighbors.
Yeah. And because of that, I'm sitting here in my mind thinking, okay, maybe that's my next step. I you know, EO has been so wonderful to me. I've been a 17-year member that, I know, people have been asking me to jump back on the board. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll talk about an idea for that for you offline.
Yeah, definitely.
After this call. Okay. Jennifer Berkowitz, tell us about you. Tell us your story before we dig really deep into what you're doing now. Tell us your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So, hi, everyone. So, my journey is pretty interesting. So, growing up, I grew up in Central Florida, and I've always known since probably the age of 8 that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Always knew that about myself. I mean, literally, as soon as I knew what the word was about, I was trying to sell everything to my friends. I was just really intrigued by the whole concept. I went to school. I ended up studying computer science, management information systems, because I really loved math and science. My dad encouraged me. My dad was a rocket scientist by trade, which is kind of interesting that I can actually say my dad was a rocket scientist. And I remember being in college trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be in business. And my dad said, why don't you take a computer science class? I fell in love with it, just always loved math and science, like I said. So I ended up going down that path, started off as a programmer out of college. I learned pretty quickly that I hated being in a back room. That's not really where I was meant to be as far as my life. And so I had started my first company back in, I must have been about 25 years old. I had just through my world, I had learned about in the labor union industry, they all had computers, women, and I can say women because I never saw men there, that were just answering the same routine phone calls about their members, figured there had to be something better. I was always trying to look at new ideas, thought, well, why not connect your computers with your phones and allow members to be able to call anytime to be able to get their annuities balances, pension balances. And so I started to develop software to automate all this. This is back in like 96, maybe, when HIPAA, right before HIPAA. And you know, so that way women could be focusing on more complex tasks for the unions. And what I learned in that business when I started that business is that, again, you really have to love what you're doing. And just developing software all day long, not a passion of mine, but I saw the opportunity. So I didn't really do very well with that business, but I ended up staying in touch with those customers. And it was years later that I started the company that actually what enabled me to scale and retire at the age of 40, which was I had started an online data backup and recovery business out of my apartment. It was actually one of those unions that lost data that I knew there had to be a better solution. Started looking around, you know, at the time it was right after 9/11. People were, you know, a lot of people had lost their data in the towers. I was in New York City at the time. And so what I did was, you know, when you think about it, why not be able to take, you know, data offsite in an encrypted format. So just to give you context, when I first started the business, I was charging $55 a gig. It was a really rough time. No one had a clue what I was talking about the idea of, you know, breaking down packets of data, encrypting it, sending it offsite. At the time, there was no Google Drive, no Mozy, no Carbonite. I mean, it was really early in the game, but I really believed in it. And what I learned is that, you know, the ones that were doing it just gave their software facilities good luck. We hope it works. My belief was that I knew that no one thought about disasters until it was too late. And so I built this whole white glove service around it. We charged like 10 times more than all of our competitors, and we still won the business. We focused on financial services firms. It really helped us to niche ourselves. And then I got an opportunity I couldn't pass up in 2014. I scale sold. It was a very profitable, debt-free, you know, multi-million dollar company. And then I sold, thought I retired at the age of 40, moved to South Florida with my family, and then got really bored very quickly. And one of the reasons why I believe I had such the success I did was having scaling up coaches and using the methodology of scaling up for my business. And I know I'm giving you a very long story, but what I learned, you know, so I called the team at Scaling Up and I said, hey, I think I want to certify myself for fun. Loved it. And now I just work with a handful of CEOs and their exec teams, helping them scale. It's been incredible being on the other side. Some of my clients have had insane growth, just so much fun watching them come to me, you know, ready to rip out their hair. And then, you know, a year later, they're not even in the business anymore. And their business is just so profitable. There's nothing that makes me happier. And so that's my journey. And, you know, there was a period of time that I was extremely sick. I was blind and bedridden, unknowingly that I had Lyme disease. And so when I see CEOs that are sick and they don't know what's going on, or they don't pay attention, they're not spending the time to go see doctors. You know, when you have your health, you have your wealth. And so I tend to focus a lot also on CEOs that sometimes have health issues too, because I'm so passionate about helping them get out of their, you know, way so that they can focus on themselves, so that they can take care of themselves. So ultimately they can take care of the business.
Love it. So first of all, one of my fun things about these podcasts is I get to learn things about friends that I didn't know. So I never knew before that your dad was a rocket scientist. And now that I understand things a lot better.
Yeah, he's a crazy guy. My best friend. My parents are the best. And he ended up, you know, it's funny. He now, years later, he started a software company. He designed software, but he's so stubborn. He won't let me help coach him. And it just kills me because, you know, he's never been able to get out of his own way. And I'm sure he's listening to this, but like, I know his business could be like a multi-million dollar business, and he just doesn't want to listen to anyone.
Too close. I'm going to move into two themes, Jen, which your story is exactly how I coach people to think about coaches, which is find someone who's walked in your shoes successfully and has now decided to devote their life to coaching, versus find someone who's never really done anything before besides coaching, which makes it more academic. And my advice to people is don't worry about the methodology as much as the person.
Yes.
and the connection. And do you think that this person can push you and you can connect with?
It is so true. I mean, because whenever someone comes to me, you know, most of my business comes from referrals today, but one of the things I will absolutely adamantly request that they do is they need to go interview other coaches. So important. You know, I am really clear. I am not for everyone. And I make it very clear that for those who I am good for, you couldn't get a better fit. But, you know, one of the things that I really pride myself in is, look, I'm in a good place in my life. I don't have to be doing this. I could be on the tennis court every day. But the reality is that my whole purpose in life is to give others the same freedom. So if you're going to work with me, you know, you have to hold yourself, you know, I'll hold you accountable. But if you say you're going to do something, do it. If you need help, I'm here for you. I will be your biggest cheerleader. But what I don't want to be is your biggest, you know what, because I am so passionate about helping you and your team get there. But if you believe that coaching is just writing a check and hoping for the best, that's not going to work. And I know coaches that are happily take your money, but not do anything about it. You know, I will easily tell a client, see you later, because it's just not of interest for me. To me, I look at it as a partnership. My clients look at me as an extension to their team. They actually see me as a team member. In fact, one of my clients, it was funny, they were all doing their one-page personal plan. And they're like, Jen, what's your personal plan? Because we're going to have your KPI on our corporate dashboard that we want you to make sure you're telling us weekly. Because I'm in touch with the team weekly. Like, I want to know what's going on. I want to be a part of them. Like, it's so much fun watching a team grow. I don't want to be transactional. I don't want to be sitting there, you know, just my old coach who, look, I liked him a lot, but, you know, he would call me a few days before the monthly meeting and say, hey, Jen, what's going on? Tell me what's happening. And it was so transactional. And that's not how I work. I'm very different. Again, unique. I like to talk to the CEO once a week. Tell me what's going on. You know, let's figure it out so that you're not sitting there in a rut for a whole month wondering, you know, until I show up. That doesn't work for me. So really important. I 100% agree with you. You've got to make sure that you interview so many different personalities, so many different experiences. Like, you know, I have a lot of experience with software development because of my background, right? But at the same time, I love working with companies that have nothing to do with that. Some people like to just focus on that. So you just got to figure out what's best for you.
Organizations, just like SBA lenders, have a branding problem. Okay. So if you, Pete, it's amazing to me, just to take an example, EOS, but the same could be held true to scaling up. And I see it with SBA lenders. Sometimes people think EOS is like religion. Okay. They've heard someone have a great EOS experience. They've read the book or whatever, and they need an EOS implementer.
Yep.
Or same with scaling up. Or sometimes people have had an awful EOS experience, and sometimes people have had an awful SBA experience. The reality is, friends, and please, Jen, correct me if I'm wrong, if you disagree with me, your coaching experience is going to be maybe 20 or 30% about the methodology and 60 or 70% about the implementation and the chemistry with your coach.
Yeah.
I strongly encourage people, if they're saying they're looking for an EOS implementer, go talk to two or three, but also go talk to two or three in different methodologies. Don't just focus on the methodology, focus on that relationship.
It's really true. And the same thing obviously holds true with the lending side, right? Like the, you know, the SBA. It's all true because it is about the people. And you know, one thing I would even challenge people to ask is like, what is that individual, regardless if it's the SBA, coaching, whatever, what is that individual doing to help themselves, to help you, right? Like, what are the things that they're doing offline, you know, to really make sure that they're supporting you the best way they can? Like, for example, in the coaching world, you're right. Like, you know, it is about probably 20 to 30%. The methodology is there. You can download all the EOS tools. You can download all the scaling up tools. It's not, you know, at the end of the day, it's very similar. It's just, the reality is you're right, the implementation, but also the person behind it. Like I say to people, you're not hiring scaling up. You're hiring Jen. That's who you're hiring. You're hiring, and I've created my own tools. I have, you know, and I have the certification for Working Genius. I have scaling up. I've been in the metronome. I've been, you know, all these other methodologies, but what you're doing is getting the whole package. Just like when they're coming to you and, you know, and multifunding, like it's because of all the things that you, who you guys are, how you support them and everything that makes you guys so good at what you do. Right. It's not, you know, if anyone needs an SBA lender, it's like, that's a generic term. It's just, how are you, you know, it's about the people and the team and what they're doing behind the scenes that are going to really help support better.
I also personally think if someone is so, and honestly, I see this a lot in EOS, if somebody is so obsessed with the methodology exclusively, and they haven't thought about or incorporated any tools outside of the methodology, I also, which is actually what EOS encourages them to do. I also think that's a mistake. So there are coaching tools and some unique situations, I think, in every situation. And you got to be able to pull from a tool bag, I think.
100%. And you got to always be helping yourself. I think all the methodologies are great. You know, there's pros and cons to each of them, right? They're all good in their own sense. But again, I'm going to keep going back to, it's the person behind it that, you know, what are we doing as coaches? Like, I can tell you that part of my week is dedicated to watching TED Talks, reading books. You know, I just, like I said, I just got certified in the 6 types of Working Genius facilitation methods, which, by the way, if you haven't read Ami, that is like an incredible book. And I'm happy to offline, I'm going to give you an assessment to do. It's a whole productivity tool. It's mind blowing on how it can help you in your career.
Tell us about it.
Tell that. Oh, I'm like, literally, like, I'm looking back at my career going, holy cow. Patrick Lencioni wrote the book. He's written the book, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, The Advantage, you know, Getting Naked. He's written a whole slew of those types of books. And The book was launched, I think, at the very end of 2020. And what he talks about is that everyone has all six working geniuses in our world, right? But what he says is there's six types of working geniuses. And what happens is that two of the six geniuses, which I'll explain in a second, if you were to do it all day long, it would give you joy. It gives you energy. Two are your working competencies. Like, you can do it all day, but it's like, at some point in time, you'll probably get burnt out, but you can do it. In the last two, if you were to do it, it drains you. And you probably haven't even noticed it, but when you use these geniuses, even if you could be exceptional at it, it just literally drains you. So let me explain what the six geniuses are. And you think about it from a life cycle of a business. The first genius, and like I said, there's no ranking or right or wrong, like, oh, if you have this, you're a better person. Everyone has it. It's just where you get your energy from, okay? It's not about skills, but energy. The first one is the genius of wonder. This genius is all about pondering the universe. Why are we doing things this way, right? Like, it's about questioning things. You know, like you see in strategy meetings, this person loves spending time at that 30,000 level, right? Like, constantly questioning what's going on. The next genius is the genius of invention. This genius is all about coming up with the ideas. So when the genius is talking all about the questions, the inventor is like, oh, I have an idea for this. This is the person that's like constantly throwing out ideas, gets energy from coming up with new ideas. Then the next genius is the genius of discernment. This genius is all about having that gut reaction. So like, if the inventor is coming up with all the ideas, the genius of discernment is saying, huh, that's not going to work, but that is a good idea. So they have this gut feeling that they can figure things out with not a lot of information, right? And make change from that. The fourth genius is the genius of galvanizing. This is all about, once you guys figure out what it is, this person who has this genius loves motivating everyone. Okay, guys, this is what we're going to do. Okay, let's go. Let's get everyone together. Loves creating that energy for pushing, for activating that change. The fifth genius is the genius of enablement. The enablement genius is all about, hey, if we're doing this project, hey, I want to be a part of that. It's all about enabling. And sometimes enabling, when you think of that, is a negative term, but it's actually a positive term. Like, it's the genius of wanting to help to move something forward, to be a part of it. And then the last genius is the genius of tenacity. This is all about finishing the projects. This genius just loves taking it on to the finish line. So a lot of times in meetings, if someone has a genius in, like, let's say, enablement and tenacity, they tend to be more in the tactical mode. So while people are talking, you know, about strategy, they're like, okay, we can do it this way. And then you usually get nauseating, you know, views, because everyone's all in different directions, right? So what happens is that as a human being, you're using all six all day long, but where are you getting your energy? Again, it has nothing to do with skill. You, like, for example, I found out through this assessment, my geniuses are on discernment and galvanizing. No question on galvanizing. I love being that cheerleader and getting everyone together. Discernment, no question about it. I love figuring, you know, like, especially when teams are trying to figure things out, things are so crazy clear to me. Interestingly enough, the areas of my frustration are under wonder and inventions. Even though I'm an idea machine, I'm always coming up with ideas. But what I started to realize is that, yeah, but when I'm in those ideation meetings, it actually drains me. I don't, like, I'll do it, but then I feel drained afterwards. And it's interesting, because the more I'm starting to understand myself, in fact, I'm doing facilitations with teams and really helping teams understand, you know, when everyone does the assessment and you look at where everyone's geniuses and frustrations are. I'll give you an example. I had a team, really fascinating. The founder, she no longer wanted to be in the day-to-day. Her husband was involved. So she left. The husband took over. We did the assessment team map on everyone's geniuses and frustrations. And one of the things I noticed in the team meeting is that they were constantly frustrated that they weren't coming up with new ideas. And they were kind of like going in like a rat race, right? And I was trying to pull data and ideas out of them, but you could tell it just wasn't in their DNA. And it was pretty clear to me that the person that left, I had a feeling, knowing who she was, that she was the idea generator and loved that. So when I did the assessment on her, turned out, you're right, she was the wonder and inventor. And so what we ended up doing was we brought her back into just the once a quarter strategy meetings to have her help with the ideas and helping with the strategy. And from there, their company completely went back around and took off. And all she needed to do is show up 4 days in the year, which she had no problems doing, to help with the ideation sessions. So it's interesting when you understand, you know, and especially if, like, let's say, you know, I see teams that, you know, don't have tenacity or discernment. When they don't have discernment, they're throwing a whole bunch of ideas out there, but a lot of them are just falling apart, or they don't have enough tenacity on their executive team to push it through the finish line. And so there's just so much to this assessment and to understanding and to this methodology. It's just, I find it so fascinating to really understand, you know, especially for like someone like me, realizing that I should probably have people around me, especially on tenacity, my assistant, who I just brought on, who could take things through the finish line, because it doesn't give me joy. To some people, it gives them so much joy. Not me. No more. Does that make sense?
Read or heard about a guy named Itzhak Adizes, Adizes?
No, who is he?
He's another one of these organizational guys, and he's got a model that probably well before this one that I use it all the time. Let me share it with you and see what you think. It's a similar theme, but let me start with the story. In the EOS implementation, they talk about visionaries and integrators.
Yep.
And so I meet entrepreneurs all the time who go, I got to go hire an integrator. Okay. And I go, slow down.
Yeah.
Okay. So what Adizes talks about is he has four quadrants. This is any high functioning team has four quadrants to it. And it's pretty impossible for any one individual to be strong at these four things. So I'm going to tell you the four things. I'm going to ask you what you think your one or two are that you're the most strong at.
Okay.
One is E, the raging entrepreneur, the idea person, 100 ideas a minute, always wanting to do new things, always wanting to take risks, et cetera, et cetera. That's the E. Every team, well-functioning team, needs some E.
Yeah, definitely.
The other is the A, which stands for administrator. Okay. And that means somebody who lives to dot I's and cross T's. They love the detail. They love the nuance. But if you think about it, every well-functioning team needs some A.
No question. Right. Not me, but no question.
Okay. The third one is an I, which also stands for integrator, but I think it's more specific in this model than in the EOS model. It means someone who's worrying about how everyone's feeling and getting along and just if everyone's happy and content and everyone's being communicated with and just worrying about feelings, for lack of a better word. And the fourth is a P, which is a producer. Okay, that could be someone's happy to do repetitive things 100 times a day.
Wow.
It could be sales, could be manufacturing, it could be whatever it is. They're a task monkey. Like, you give them specific things to do, and they're happy to do them repetitive. So if you take the EAIP, which one do you think is your biggest strength?
Well, I'm always coming up with ideas. Like I said, they drain me, but I come up with a lot of ideas, and I definitely am not a person for repetitive tasks. No question about that. If I were to put myself in any of those four quadrants, probably number one more than the others. Although I do worry about other people, because I think just my tendency of who I am. Like, when I was CEO of Boomi, my tech company, you know, I tell people this still today, I believe the CEO's job is to take care of their team. 100%. That is your job. And make sure that they are super happy, super focused, because I know that if they are that, then our clients are going to be super happy. It's a no-brainer. So I do enjoy the making sure everyone is okay. I just don't know where, I think I would be split in the middle of that.
So personally, I think I'm a pretty good E and a pretty good I.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a terrible A and I'm a horrific P.
Yeah.
Actually. Okay. And so as I build my team, and if you look at 90% of the people around here, they're incredible A's and incredible P's.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. So it's similar in the sense of what Patrick Lencioni is talking about. Similar.
Right. But maybe a little simpler, right? Mm-hmm. Because people can just kind of self-identify with that E-I-A-P. And it's interesting how sometimes you can identify a weakness of an organization. Like, somebody I know is I won't say who, but I'm close to them, is in his first job at a company. Okay. And I know that that organization, just by hearing his experiences, is terrible at I. No one in that organization is worrying about integration.
Yep.
And so if you can sometimes identify a weakness, sometimes bigger companies lose their E.
Yeah. Yeah, you can lose. And especially if it doesn't give you joy. Like, I find some CEOs, like when I think about the six functions, you know, they don't like the galvanizing part. They don't like the motivating part. So fine, find someone on the team that will motivate, put them in front of the town halls, put them in front of the big projects, put them like it doesn't. I think what happens is that people feel like because of their titles, they have to act a certain way when in actuality, it's not the case. Whatever four quadrant you're in or whatever the six geniuses you are, you just have to figure out, like you're talking about, who's around you that can help support you in that role and play that so that ultimately, you know, it's because it's not a judgment zone. It's just, this is just how we're wired and it's okay. It's just find the right people around you and magic's going to happen. I can tell you with 100% that, you know, people ask me, how do you scale, Jen? How do these companies scale? You get the right people in the right seats doing the right things right. That is it. End of story. It is not rocket science. And, you know, when people come to me asking for help, I will ask them one really critical question. Are you willing to make the tough decisions? Because if you're not going to make a tough decision because, you know, you may have had a best friend you've been with forever, but they're not going to help get you to the next level. Are you willing to put them in a different role or let them go? One of the two. Because if they're not going to help you, you got to move on. That's what, when I've seen teams reconfigure themselves in any way possible, you know, whatever it looks like, and then get the magic team in place, they skyrocket. They skyrocket. And so it's about figuring out those four quadrants and the six geniuses and all of that, and really understanding where everyone's strengths are and where they're getting joy. Because it's not about strengths, because you can do something, but if it drains you, it's not worth it. So the question is where is your energy going to flow so that you're going to be super excited every day and feel super fulfilled to do, you know, that magic. That's what it's all about.
In the early years, you kind of have to do it all.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And so that's part of the challenge is as the organization or the company, you get used to those habits. But as when you get through that, you can start thinking about these things more. And that means you have to reallocate people, some people have to let things go. And that's not easy either.
No. And it's funny because years ago, I think one of my skill sets that I was really good at was the tenacity part. I was so critical about all the details. And I think part of that came from, I used to work at Walt Disney World back in my high school days. And being on the entertainment side, I learned they were meticulous with everything they did. I remember before going on stage, if there was a little nick in my red heel, they were sitting there with like magic marker, red magic marker, making everything perfect. And I learned in my career about how perfection, how, you know, giving that whole beautiful experience. And so I became obsessed over it and really good at it. But I think as we get older, it's like, I think my patience level, maybe because I'm 50 now, my patience level is not where I was at 25, but this is why it's so important to have people around you. Like, it's funny, I've written half of a book. I have some courses that are half finished. It's like, I'm realizing I need to have those people behind me to just take it through to finish line, because if not, they're going to still sit, you know, where they are today, which is a problem. And, you know, again, that's the idea side of me that just gets the ideas out, but then has to find someone to finish.
Totally. And entrepreneurs all the time, you're onto your next idea before you finish your last one.
Totally. But that's why I like coaching too, is that seeing the teams do it. I mean, I really love my clients. I feel very fortunate I get to do what I do. I really do. I feel like it's such a gift what I get to do, and seeing them come up with a new idea, seeing them implement it. And I think on a side note, one of the best parts about being a coach is I don't have to do the details. Like, you know, I sit there, I'm with them in person, you know, or on Zoom, depending on where they're located around the world, but we're figuring out what their plans are, how they're going to do it. And then I'm like, okay, go for it, you guys. I'm there. I'm your cheerleader behind you, but I don't have to do the details, which is fabulous. And then I come back and make sure that they're there for the next step.
I think I've got years ahead before I'm a grandparent, but people tell me what grandparenting is like. Maybe coaching is like grandparenting.
It is. It totally is. It's the best because you really, yeah. Like once you're done, you're like hand back. And the nice thing is that unlike when you have your company, look, if it's not good, you know what? You move on. You just say, you know what? You can't move on from being a grandparent. It's a little harder.
True. Yeah, so I'm let's go back with to what you talked about, which is, I think, really interesting and difficult, which is the CEOs and taking care of themselves and their health and their balance. I know it's something I struggle with. Tell us a little bit how you think about all that and how you try to help people.
Yeah. So the saying I will always say until I'm not, so I'm like blue in the face, is what gets scheduled gets done. I'm sorry, but everyone's going to say they don't have time for something. You do. It's just a matter of where you're putting it in your priorities. That's it. End of story. And so Unfortunately, I've seen friends in my life pass away because they didn't take care of themselves. One was an EO member. He didn't look at a skin issue that he was having until it was too late. Another person, prostate cancer, just didn't really bother with it, thinking it was going to grow slower than it did. So I think the thing is that, look, we're so busy as CEOs taking care of everyone else that we forget about ourselves. And if you're not taking care of yourself, you're never going to be able to take care of other people. So that's one of the things in my coaching journey that I really focus on with my clients, because I feel it is so important. We can talk about business all day long, but what are you doing about yourself? I don't care if it's a 5-minute walk around the office scenario. In fact, one of the things I like to do with my clients, so I'll set up weekly calls with the CEO, as I probably mentioned. And sometimes I'll say to them, especially if it's like spring, it's nice outside, guess what? You know, Ami or whoever, you know, the client name, go put on sneakers today. And you and I are going to have our conversation walking. You know, I will put my sneakers on. We're going to go outside and walk. You know, let's not do Zoom. I think everyone's zoomed out anyways. Let's just get on the phone and let's just talk. Let's just talk through it while you're walking. Because, you know, you can't say that you're too busy, you know, to walk. You can do it on your call with me. Why not? So I'm a big fan of, you've got to figure out how to do it in your schedule. And I can absolutely tell you that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, better, easier thinking you can be. I know that one of the things I try to do because of my conditions is trust me, I'm not the best at it, but I try to eat clean when I can. It's funny. I'll go into modes where I'm like eating super clean and then I get, you know, eat yucky again. Then I feel yucky. Then I'll go back to eating clean. But it really does make a difference. I think that in society, all the chemicals, all the junk that we're eating is only going to make our productivity worse. Right now, I'm not eating any gluten, sugar, dairy, caffeine. This is caffeine free, you know, decaf coffee and alcohol, like literally nothing. And I'm really trying to eat nothing processed. I've been doing that for a few weeks and I feel amazing. I don't feel tired at 3 p.m. I feel like I could go run a marathon. And I know it's not easy, but being sick isn't easy either. So I would just say, you know, look at your calendar, open up your calendar from the past 2 weeks. I guarantee there was probably something you could have pushed off or something you could have moved, or you probably wasted time on social media. Instead, just dedicate, you know, get up a half an hour early. There's a great book, Miracle Morning, talking all about the things you can do before 6 a.m. I mean, I don't know. I just get, I guess as a coach, I'm there for those CEOs and to make sure that they're feeling great. But for every, you know, for those who I'm not helping directly, just promise me on this podcast right now, while you're listening to the two of us, go into your calendar, whether it's this week's next week, and just call it like my name, call it Jen time, call it whatever your name is time, and do not allow anyone to take a hold of it and decide what you're going to do with it. Just something, some small step that will help. Take a walk. Like I said, go to sleep earlier. Just promise yourself. You promise everyone else every day at work. Promise yourself.
And part of that, I think, I'm trying to get through that journey. But part of that is if you don't have the time for yourself, then you got to fix it.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? We say we don't have time for ourselves because we're so busy building our empires, right? And I look back and look, I'm guilty of this too. When I think back, my business was running so fast. We were growing super fast. And I always said, oh, I don't have time because I've got to go meet with Goldman Sachs or UBS or whoever, you know, because we were doing all these partnerships. But the reality is that when I got sick, life still moved. Yeah. It still moved forward. And the reality is, and also too, as a mom, this was the biggest eye-opening scenario for me. When I had my child, my first child, I had both my kids when I was CEO of my company. And one of the things I learned is I was running a mile a minute, going to every networking, going to everything. And then when Ryan was born, all of a sudden I hit a wall. Like literally, because I mean, we got pregnant on our honeymoon. So it was like, bam, like no time. And I learned pretty quickly that I could no longer work those crazy hours. And that's where you really have to push everyone around you. Because if you can't delegate everyone around you to do the things that you were doing, then either you're a terrible delegator, which is okay to understand and admit to it, or you have the wrong people. It's one of those two things, because you have to be able to delegate. So, you know, if you need help delegating, great. We can help show you how to delegate. If you have the wrong people, well, we can help you figure that out too. So you can go find the right people. But that's also so critical too. There's always time. And if you, God forbid, got hit by a car tomorrow, I guarantee things are going to move on. So the question is what are you doing about yourself? Take care of yourself. Life is short. Life is promised to no one tomorrow. It is promised to no one. So you have to make the most of today and feel great and know that you have one body. That's it. We have one body. We can't swap it out. And no matter if we have $1 billion, Steve Jobs wanted to swap out his body. He couldn't do it. He had multi-billion dollar, you know, dollars. So you got one shot to keep your heart healthy, one shot to keep your body healthy. Let's take care of ourselves.
The more you delegate, the more impact you can have also.
And you're good at that. I love watching like how you're involved in so many things. It's incredible. Like, you know, between, you know, the Israel Initiative, like I've always been so impressed with you. I mean, like, what do you think the secret is on your delegation skills? Like, what, just curious.
I don't know if I have all the answers, but I'm constantly trying to get myself fired.
Yeah. Like Andy Grove said once, he said, great quote. He said, if I were to walk out of this room right now and come back in, and like, if I were to fire myself, leave the room and come back in and be the new CEO, what should I start doing? Or differently? I don't remember his exact quote, but Andy Grove from Intel had a great quote like that about like, go fire yourself, leave the room. And what would the new CEO do?
The thing I'm working on, which I'm so happy with, although it's hard, is I'm no longer in my email box.
Yeah, that's a huge time suck.
And it's amazing, Jen, how I'm probably about 400 emails a day. Okay. And we're figuring it out because it's creating, I mean, it's a lot of organizational tension to figure out how to make it work. But we have a new woman, like chief of staff role, who's mm-hmm. in my email box, managing it for me. And so yesterday she was off, okay, because she moved. And so ordinarily now I would look up and I'd have 3 emails in my inbox. Yesterday there were, at the end of the day, there were like 220.
Wow. So I'm curious, through your journey of doing that, what was the first step that you took? Immediately just bring everything over to her? Did you do it in parallel? Listeners could hear how you approached that.
The first person we did it with did not work.
Okay. Happens. Trial and error. We get that.
It was maybe because it was part-time. I don't know.
Maybe. Okay. Well, okay. So you learned through that.
Maybe it was the wrong personality. The second person just started 5-6 weeks ago, and I literally threw her in the fire.
Got it. Yeah. So you threw her in the fire and you said, hey, and did you set up rules to say, I only, if you think this is important, put it into this folder, or how did you organize
it? The trick is she's got to get into my brain, which is a weird place to live in.
I would love to get in your brain. I'd be so curious what goes on over there every day.
I haven't figured it out yet. But the flip side of it is it creates other organizational challenges, like who's answering my email? And what's going on, and what's her role vis-a-vis other teams and other parts of the company and stuff. And we're working through all that. We'll figure it all out.
Yeah.
But I also, whether I'm right or wrong, I elected not to do that virtually. And I know that can be way cheaper overseas, but I was scared to do that. We're together at least half the time in the same room.
I think there's something said about the human connection. And it's funny because this is an ongoing conversation I've had with a lot of people. There's, you know, some people love the whole virtual component, and there's value to that too, right? Like economically, but there's also something to be said about that collaboration. And I think a lot of CEOs are realizing it today, as we're hearing in the headlines, everyone's forcing everyone now to come back into the offices to be together. Yeah. I think it helps.
There's an article somewhere, I'll forward it to you, but some stat that layoffs are happening, people getting laid off first, are the remote people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing that as well.
So I think these virtual teams create such complexities and so difficult to maintain culture. So
it's hard, but I will say that I've had teams that were 100% virtual globally that have had great, amazing culture, like incredible culture, but it all starts at the top. And I think part of it is the CEO really focusing on culture. It can work, but for the most part, you're right. It is not easy.
If you're going to do it, you got to focus on it hard.
You got to really go strong. And this is where I know with one team I worked with for a while, we had to do a whole slew of things to really build that culture up of getting the whole team together, really knowing what was going on. They had about 100 people globally. It took a lot of work, but it can definitely be done. And they're running so smoothly. I guarantee if they do their recent ENPS scores, they'll be super high. But it takes a lot of work and focus and dedication. And who owns it? That's the question. Who owns making sure that the culture is strong?
In the EAIP, it's the I person. Who's in charge of the I?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Jen, people want to learn more about you or find you. Where do they go?
Sure. Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me, actually I have some TikToks I do giving some helpful hints, but my name is Jennifer Berkowitz. You can email me at jennifer@rnjadvisorygroup.com. So it's R and then A-N-D-J advisory group spelled out.com. R&J stands for Ryan and Jake, my two boys. So you can find me on R&J advisory group. LinkedIn is Jennifer Walzer Berkowitz. I'm on social media, it's Scale Up with Jen. And you can also call me 917-816-0311. Happy to help anyone who's got some questions.
Give her a buzz. Jen, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on OmniSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.